Mark Collier, For Thomas Matters Radio. Sponsor today, Omega Processing Solutions. They can help you and your business achieve its profit and productivity goals in 2016. They've got an innovative merchant processing program that can help your business boost the bottom line, streamline operations, and get paid faster. They offer a bunch of different things that nobody else does: secure and simple virtual processing, invoicing, online bill payments, mobile payment apps, e-commerce solutions, unlimited system users, and accounting integration. That's going to help, guys, during tax season coming up. Next month and a half, we're right there. As always, you'll enjoy 24/7 customer service, no contract, no early termination fees. Call them 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724, extension 7, or you can visit them at omegap.com. So today on the show, we've got Seth Thompson. Seth is the publisher, one of the publishers for Bourbon Review Magazine and GoBourbon.com. I've known Seth for a long time. Seth and I are fraternity brothers from the University of Kentucky, Delta Tau Delta, Delts. We go back a long, long way, and we're going to kind of talk about what they've got coming up next. They're the media sponsor next weekend for the Bourbon Classic in Louisville. But we're going to kind of talk about really the renaissance of, you know, bourbon in general. When my four fraternity brothers, Seth, his brother Justin Thompson, Brad Carrick, and Bobby Kinney is what we called him, Bobby Eidson. They started the Bourbon Review in 2008. They were the first magazine to kind of take on bourbon as a lifestyle. Since they have, I think they've got around 60,000 subscribers in every single state, in 20 different countries. So, and you look at their Facebook page, it's got 117,000 likes. I mean, it's a big deal. And these guys were kind of on the cutting edge. So we're going to give Seth a call here on the Omega Processing Hotline for For Thomas Matters Radio. So we have Seth Thompson, publisher of the Bourbon Review Magazine, on the Omega Processing Hotline. Seth, how are you, man?
Mark, doing great. It's been a long time. It's great to hear from you.
Yeah, you too. So Seth and I were our fraternity brothers, Delta Tau Delta, down in Lexington, KY. His offices are still there on Cheapside, and you said your office is right above a bourbon bar. Is that right?
Appropriately enough, you are correct, Mark. It's right above Bluegrass Tavern, which they've got quite a bourbon collection in there. I know. I think they're boasting around 500 bourbons now. I mean, they've got quite a colossal selection there.
So you can expense market research all the time. You just go right down and.
That is correct. I mean, there's always something new to learn here in the bourbon world, and we're eager students. So
bourbon, and it's just the coolest job in the world. Started in 2008 by four of our fraternity brothers: your brother, Brad Carrick, Bobby Eidson. You guys are up. Tell me if I'm wrong on this. Over 60,000 people from every state and 20 countries read the Bourbon Review on a quarterly basis. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mark. You know, we've kind of fortunate to be in a nice niche. You know, something people have always been interested in to some degree, but especially in the last 5 years, it's been amazing to see where bourbon has kind of spread its wings there and where it's going. So
the Bourbon Review focuses on people, science, and art of the bourbon lifestyle, which is associated with those who like to entertain, cook, celebrate special moments with America's only native spirit, bourbon. I probably not a lot of people know that. It's the only native spirit is truly American. So
that is correct. They're very, very near and dear to not only Kentucky hearts, but, American as a whole there.
You can find them on their website, which is gobourbon.com. $16.99 gets you a year subscription. That's four magazines. You're also the media sponsor for next weekend's Bourbon Classic in Louisville, Kentucky. That's Friday, February 26th, and Saturday, February 27th. That Bourbon Classic, some of those highlights will include Bourbon Classic cocktail challenges featuring chefs, bartenders, a general session with bourbon masters, Bourbon Classic University it's just everything bourbon. And you can get tickets probably on gobourbon.com, I would think. Talk a little bit about that, Seth. So you're obviously that's what you're doing right now. You're up at dawn and you're having your cocktail at night thinking about bourbon all day long. Talk about the Bourbon Classic a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Mark. You know, this is our fourth annual one that we've hosted in Louisville there at the appropriately enough on what they call now is Whiskey Row. You know, back in its heyday, around before Prohibition, you know, there was an enormous amount of distillery action and traffic there. You know, obviously after Prohibition, that footprint of bourbon distillery, you know, action was significantly reduced, you know, to say the least. But now it's you know, kind of returning back to getting back to glory there. A lot of new bourbon synergy in that area, and you know, kind of jumping into Bourbon Classic, we really wanted to do something that obviously had bourbon at the epicenter, really showcased, you know, the craftsmanship of Kentucky bourbon, you know, the lifestyle surrounding it, the bourbon icons, you know, the Jimmy Russells and Fred Knows, Harlan Wheatley's and Elmer T. Lee's of the world, those great bourbon figures. But, you know, also for us, really importantly, was sort of marrying bourbon to the foodie culture and the cocktail culture as well, and just to really expand the experience, you know, and to bring the sensory component of it to another level. So, you know, kind of jumping into what Friday, I think, really exudes that to the utmost extent there. On Friday, if your audience is able to check out what we're doing, you know, go to the Kentucky Center. We've got, it is a food and cocktail pairing competition. So we'll have nine different bourbon stations. You know, each of those stations, you have world-class chef, you know, top shelf bartender working together on small plate and cocktail pairings. You know, and the beauty of it, you know, as a consumer, there are two different rounds of this. So you'll get to try 18 different, you know, food and cocktail pairings.
18. Well, so, does the food start tasting better towards the end? I mean, I know they're world class, but come on.
You know, I guess it's all in the taste of the beholder there. Like you said, I'm sure after, you know, after you're getting into that 12, 14, 15 small plate, and especially the cocktails there, you know, like you said, I'm sure it doesn't hurt the situation, but, you know, definitely sensory overload. And, you know, it's for us, again, it's been great to have, to be able to harness the culinary and the cocktail talent. You know, Louisville, their Epicurean scene has really embraced Friday. You know, it's been our goal to really, for Bourbon Classic, we want to do a world-class lifestyle event, you know, on sort of the bourbon holy land, you know, in the heart of bourbon country. So we, you know, again, we just want to really do something that flexes the bourbon, the foodie, and the cocktail culture of, you know, what we're very proud of here in bourbon country.
So that's the Bourbon Classic. That's next weekend. You can go to gobourbon.com or thebourbonclassic.com and get some more information on that. I want to talk, Seth, about, you know, how you got started in this. You know, we've known each other for a long time, always been a really happy-go-lucky guy, one of the guys I like to hang out with a lot when we were in Lexington. But when I first heard about the Bourbon Review, I just thought, wow, I mean, that's really ambitious. But to see where it is now, from 2008 to 2016, you're now in year eight of the Bourbon Review. This is just, it's got to be crazy for you just to see where it started from to where it is now.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's, you know, we've been very fortunate to grow, you know, to grow as bourbon has grown since we started, you said, Mark, there in 2008. it's just been fascinating to see what bourbon's done, how it's blossomed, the culture and just everything surrounding it, to see it really grown as it has. Coming here now, if you're taking a bourbon distillery tour, each unique one is really invested so heavily in the experience, so that's what we really see is people ask, how much more can bourbon grow? Well, I think there's I don't think we've got to the tip of the iceberg yet by any means. With bourbon really doing it right, focusing on premium, taking each brand, trying to elevate its premium footprint there, and then again, investing so much into elevating that distillery experience from when you come here, the Bourbon Trail, Bourbon Country, really get to see what each distillery does to make itself unique.
So I picture you four guys kind of sitting around, maybe before. It's got to be, obviously, it's got to be after college, but I see us, in the same scenario, four guys sitting around talking about how to make their passion bourbon, how to make that, a monetized business success. Talk about the early stages. What's the first conversation that you remember where you thought, hey, this might be a good idea for a business?
Yeah, the seeds of the Bourbon Review were planted in 2007. My brother Justin there and fellow founder and our attorney brother Bob Edson kind of put their heads together. Bobby at the time was living in California. He was going to UCLA business school out there, getting his MBA, and he spent a year just living out in California in the Santa Barbara area and kind of absorbed the culture. And really studying what Santa Barbara and that wine country experience and the Napa experience really opened our eyes of what kind of impact we have here, in our backyard that's so special, what wine's accomplished in that area, geographically speaking, really inventing this really cool cultural, experience with the food aspect and, the terrain and, the romanticism of it. So we were, Justin and Bobby, this was around, he was in town for his Christmas break, the MBA program there. And, Bobby says, hey, man, we should look into the foreign magazine realm and, start kicking the tires on ideas. And did a little research and discovered that no one was doing anything that really focused on bourbon. There were whiskey magazines out there, but bourbon was really a small component of that. So, we were able to really roll our sleeves up, look at that and say, hey, what the heck? let's get down to business here and have some fun. Like you said, do something we're really passionate about and try to make something that really exudes the experience that we have here in our backyard in Kentucky that you can't find anywhere else in the world. You can find wine almost on any continent. Bourbon is very specific to to America, to the USA, but within that, 95% and change of the world's bourbon is made essentially in a 60-mile radius here in central Kentucky in the Bluegrass.
Talk about that. Why is that? Is it the landscape? Is it the limestone? Talk about why the bourbon is so centralized to Kentucky.
It's along the lines of what you just said there, Mark. I think a couple hundred years ago when, the country was just establishing itself in the late 1700s, early 1800s there, we did have a nice, migrating culture looking to expand westward. From the East Coast there, we're looking to blotch out, carve up, the vast American territories. And we did have in this area, a lot of settlers that knew how to do some distilling. Corn was definitely an abundant crop that was grown. And, especially back then, that corn has a limited shelf life as any crop, and you know, how do you get longevity out of an excess crop? You turn it into a whiskey, you distill it, and all of a sudden that becomes a currency in itself. So you had this all the way back to the frontier culture, and you know, especially here in Kentucky, you know, you had the river boats coming through the port on Maysville, you know, there in northern Kentucky, you know, around where you're at, mm-hmm. and you know, those river boats picking up that. At the time, you know, Bourbon County was much broader, much more colossal than what it is now. It actually extended, you know, from essentially West Virginia all the way to where we are now. That was all considered Bourbon County. It was huge, you know, named after the the French royal family that helped us out in the Revolutionary War, helped support our cause. So it was kind of an homage of that. There, you had huge territory named Bourbon County, and the ships, you know, the river boats picking up those barrels with that, you know, with the whiskey in there, and then by that time the boats migrate, you know, down the Ohio Mississippi River all the way to New Orleans, which, you know, is another very prominent, you know, French territory. So, sure. You know, it's kind of folklore, and those barrels having bourbon on them, you know, it's where the name stuck. You know, and here we are today, you know, with bourbon doing what it's doing. But you're right about the geography as well. Here in Kentucky, we do have, you know, just a vast network of limestone aquifers underneath our feet. That limestone's really pivotal, and, you know, you filter out the iron, and you replace that with other minerals like calcium, which, you know, a lot of people will say is why we have such a prominent horse culture here, you know, great Derby winners, because of that limestone water filtering out the iron and adding in, again, important minerals like calcium there.
So bourbon and horses, that's all you need, right?
Pretty much. That's definitely the
and women.
Kentucky experience.
Bourbon, horses, and women are in Kentucky, I don't think that you can do much better in any other state on all three of those counts. So,
you know, absolutely. That's what we're known for, right?
Yeah, that's right. And a good basketball team too helps. So,
that's right. Absolutely.
We're not. So, I guess you talked about this earlier, like why bourbon and how much more can bourbon do? Obviously, you think that, you know, there's a lot more to kind of evolve from where we are now. What's something surprising that, you know, about the industry that's come up recently, surprising or something that you're excited about the bourbon culture in general?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a broad topic to touch on, and I think, you know, for me personally, it's still just being in awe and amazed more by the growth. You know, you look at the industry numbers and, you know, the American whiskey category as a whole, you know, domestically has grown in double digits for, you know, X amount of years, 3, 4, 5 years in a row now. And which is just crazy. You know, it's almost unheard of, you know, to see any other, you know, a product that's made here on American soil, you know, that maintains that kind of growth continually. It's really exciting there. You know, it's incredible to see. So for me, just really sitting back, looking at, you know, getting excited about seeing bourbon made actually, you know, outside of Kentucky soil, I think that is a good sign for growth long term. You know, I think it's if you're seeing bourbon made in Texas, made, you know, on the West Coast there, made up in New York, I think that sort of planting the bourbon seed there and getting people, you know, infected in a good way with the bourbon bug. You know, if you can rope in, you know, a whole culture of people that, you know, that had something they can be prideful in their state, you know, I think it's just going to lead them to appreciate Kentucky bourbon and open up doors to where those doors might have been closed if bourbon wasn't doing what it's doing currently.
Well, and to your point, and, you know, you're talking about domestically bourbon being produced in other states, but internationally too. I don't know if it's being produced, but I know it's being consumed. you know, you've got 20 different countries that you ship subscriptions to. The largest bourbon bar, I guess, you know, anecdotally, is here in Newport at Newberry's. But before Newberry's took that crown, I think the largest bourbon bar by selection was in Japan. So, you know, they internationally, people have a taste for it as well.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely, Mark. And that's the real the exciting frontier, you know, that I think we're all curious, people that are keeping an eye on the growth of bourbon to discover is, you know, that's all it takes is, you know, an outside international market, you know, whether it's an Asian market or, you know, India or Russia or, you know, a slew of European countries there. I mean, all it takes is a few big markets to, you know, again, to really grasp bourbon and to get that thirst for bourbon going. And then all of a sudden, you know, the bourbon distilleries here in Kentucky, I think, are going to have a great problem on their hands, you know, keeping up with, you know, keeping supply up with demand.
Well, and I think to that end, there are a number of new distilleries kind of opening up. We've got a couple, or at least three that I know about in Northern Kentucky that have opened in, you know, the last 3-4 years. New Riff, which is right by the Party Source in Newport. Boone County Distilling, and I think there's actually another bourbon distiller in Ludlow that's popping up. So talk about, you know, I know some of those bars that we touched on, Newberry's, Japs, Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar, Wise Guys. A lot of those bourbon bars in Northern Kentucky are making the Bourbon Reviews list of, you know, 75 best bourbon bars in the country. Talk about Northern Kentucky's bourbon experience and how that's kind of opening up.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the market there is there. You know, if you build it, they will come. I think, you know, like you said, those establishments here, the Newberry and Molly Wellman's crushing it with her place, my Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar and Japs, and, you know, the Goodfellas establishment there, all those places, which I'm, you know, I'm sure, and more there are growing, and, you know, I think it definitely, it'll be interesting just as bourbon is growing. I think, you know, there's an appetite that hasn't been met yet, you know, and I think growth will continue to blossom there in the Northern Kentucky area, and just, you know, really, as it should be, you know, it's, in a sense, that's kind of where bourbon's sort of home began there, you know, once again on the port of Maysville there, the river boats picking up those whiskey barrels, taking them down to New Orleans, and, you know, it might take up to 6 months for a ship to travel and reach the New Orleans destination, and spending that time in the barrel, I think that definitely, it's not historically proven, but I think it's very much implied that helps.
Yeah,
it really sowed the seeds for bourbon being what it is today.
I'll go ahead and claim that story as truth from Northern Kentucky's perspective. We'll go ahead and claim that, and we'll say, yeah, let's just mark it down as fact. So you,
that works for me, Mark.
you obviously have a pretty cool job. What's been one of the coolest bourbon related things you've gotten to do? You know, being involved with the Bourbon Review.
You know what I really enjoyed, I think Justin, my brother, and I both will attest, is, you know, going to different, really seeing just how cool bourbon is, for lack of better words, you know, how cool of a cultural item it is when you go outside of Kentucky. You know, when you go to New York City or even Miami now, you know, again, L.A. or San Francisco, Chicago, obscure markets, you know, the Midwest, really see bourbon be this kind of exotic, you know, hot item to embrace there, and, you know, going to, you know, these fun, interesting little lifestyle festivals. You know, we were real adamant, loved going to the Charleston Food and Wine Fest here in South Carolina, and, you know, Charleston's a real hotbed for, you know, food and now cocktail culture. You know, they've got great chefs there, and I think that's been a really big component of bourbon's, you know, the recent growth in the last 8 years are these chefs. You know, that's part of the whole trend. The chefs love the bourbon, and, you know, in turn, they have all the attention on the show, the Bobby Flays and, you know, those people of the world there, Sean Brocks, really leading this charge of, you know, farm to table, and, you know, bourbon fits in that realm with, you know, just being a historically significant part of American culture. And, you know, for us, just, you know, being at a Charleston Food and Wine Fest and seeing all the chefs go crazy and love bourbon, and it's a really important part of the fun. To see bourbon at the epicenter and things like that, it just really got us excited. And that's kind of really what was our main inspiration for starting the Bourbon Classic.
So, and again, we're with Seth Thompson, one of the publishers for the Bourbon Review. On GoBourbon.com, you can see some of those recipes maybe that Seth's talking about. You can also read about some events that they have going up and some articles. You can also buy some cool bourbon stuff as well. Is there a proper way, Seth, to kind of taste bourbon?
Yeah, well, good question there. I think it just depends on what stages you are. You know, I think, you know, with this, you're first kind of cutting your teeth on bourbon, so to speak. You know, Mark, going back to our good old days at UK, I mean, I think, you know, however you sort of stumble upon it, get, you know, develop a taste for it.
I think mine was on Big Brother night.
You know, with bourbon and Coke there at potentially Redmond, you know, back in our day, Mark.
Yeah.
You know, the local Lexington honky tonk, you know, and then you sort of move up the scale there, and you know, you might progress to bourbon and water, you know, bourbon on the rocks, and then, you know, when you're officially the big boy, you're ready to try it neat. You know, when you grow just a little more, when you're develop a palate for it, you know, get your taste buds around it. But, you know, Fred Noe there, he's the great grandson of Jim Beam. You know, he's just a very, very much a part, I think, why a huge component of what makes bourbon so interesting. I mean, he's the real deal. You know, he's authentic. He's just a great storyteller and just a huge personality. But, you know, he'll go over sort of the Fred Noe way of tasting bourbon. It's similar to tasting another spirit like wine. You know, you start out, you look at it, you can study the color of it, you know, get a feel for if it's darker, it's probably, you know, been aged longer in the bourbon barrels there. So, you know, you start out with your different senses. You start out with your eyes, then you move to the nose there. Fred will always say, make sure to part your lips just a little bit, because unlike, you know, wine or another alcohol product that's at a lower proof, bourbon is at least 80 proof in order to be bourbon there. So you got a little more alcohol heat on it, so part your lips. That way, you know, you can really absorb those nice sensory aromas there. You won't get burned on it, so to speak. And, you know, when you're ready to move to the best step there, the tasting part, you know, absorb it in the mouth, absorb it in the palate, and, you know, with Fred, he calls it the Kentucky Chew, and it kind of sounds crazy, but I've done it, it's effective. It kind of opens up the sensory experience. You swish the bourbon over the different parts of your mouth, the front, the back, and the sides, and it really allows, you know, to hit the sweet, you know, the smoky aspects of it, you know, those different flavor components to kind of give you a true sense of what you're tasting.
That's really interesting. So that's probably a cool experience to be able to, you know, sit there and have a proper drink with Jim Beam's grandson. I mean, that's got to be a cool experience.
Yeah, it was, Mark. And, you know, really getting back to your question, what's been for us so interesting, and that is probably number one, is really getting to know these, you know, kind of bourbon icons, these bourbon celebrities like Fred Noe, like getting to know the Van Winkles. You know, Julian, you know, Preston Van Winkle was adult, you know, at UK there. And he's, you know, a great guy, his father, just terrific people, down-to-earth family that, you know, has really been a large component of bourbon's kind of that sex appeal, you know?
Yeah. And I would never ask you to kind of kind of rank your bourbons. I wouldn't ask you to do that, but give me a best bang for your buck bourbon that maybe you have in your liquor cabinet right now.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the great thing about bourbon is there's an ocean of it out there that has, you know, that nice approachable price range of, you know, in the low 20s to the low 30s. You can really cover a lot of ground there for, you know, really very palatable, you know, bourbons to enjoy. You know, I think Eagle Rare is a terrific one there. You know, a single barrel, 10-year product that's, you know, typically runs in retail price, you know, in the lower 30s. But you can almost hop to any of the major distilleries. You know, you can't go wrong with a Four Oaks single barrel, again, in that price range. You know, you get to a bullet bourbon or the rye whiskey there. You know, that's, you know, in that sort of mid-20-ish range there. You know, so that's what I love about bourbon. You know, really, you can there's a lot to explore there. You can cover a lot of ground with, you know, with $30 in your pockets.
Yeah. So we've got the Party Source in Northern Kentucky. It's just a huge monstrosity of everything that is great about you know, alcohol and parties and all that kind of stuff. And recently, we're kind of used to this. We see people camp out for Big Blue Madness or, you know, basketball tickets sometimes. Are people crazy for camping out for Pappy or for bourbon in general?
You know, I guess it's crazy is probably an appropriate but fun way to put it, you know, and that's been, you know, part of the amazing, you know, experience with watching bourbon go from, you know, when we started the magazine in 2008, you could find, you know, at least here in Kentucky, you know, if you went to your Party Source or your liquor barns or, you know, most liquor stores, you could find some Van Winkle on the shelf there. You know, you could find 12 or 15 year products that they've got, their expressions, which, you know, those would go fast because they were, you know, a little more affordable, somewhere in that, you know, $50 to $80 range. But you could find the 20 and 23 years. I mean, I remember thinking, God, having Van Winkle 20 is that's $120. Who's going to pay that for a bourbon, you know?
Right.
Now, God, you know, everybody's kicking themselves for not having the crystal ball, you know, looking at it clearly there and stocking up on some good product when the opportunity was there. But, you know, seeing this, you know, bourbon craze, the Van Winkle craze, and you know, I think the Van Winkle product was terrific for kind of blazing that must-have bourbon trail, and I think it's led people to bourbon, and it's led them to think, well, you know, what else is out there that I need to have, that's hard to get? And, you know, there are a lot of companies that do these limited edition expressions there that, like you said, just you really forces you to put your finger on the pulse of when these products are being released. You know, like you said, it's just getting crazier and crazier when these limited releases come out, to see people just bearing the elements and really wanting that bourbon.
Well, yeah, and to your point, talk about crazy. There's an article on the front page of GoBourbon.com right now that deals with kind of the bourbon heists that, you know, some people actually went to the extreme measures of creating a syndicate to steal bourbon, bourbon barrels, and then sell them, I guess, on a black market basis. Obviously, that's completely crazy. Do you see, do you have any takeaways from what happened there? Or, I mean, that was nuts, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was absolutely, you know, I think it was shocking. You know, pretty quickly, if you look at the situation, I think your gut would tell you it was, fortunately, probably an act of people working inside some of those companies, you know, that are great. You know, here you go. You've got these wonderful companies here that are, you know, employing generation after generation of bourbon workers. And, you know, I guess occasionally you're going to get a few bad apples in the bunch. And that's what happened here. You know, somebody was willing to take the risk. And I definitely would say that it wasn't worth it for them. You know, I don't think they, these individuals were, you know, it's like not quite like stealing a Picasso, where if you can sell it, you know, you got enough money to move down to South America. You know, they were apprehended, they were caught, and, you know, again, definitely was quite the noisemaker.
Yeah, they end up getting around like $100,000 worth of bourbon or something like that, stolen $100,000 and then selling them to people and basically saying that, you know, this was their extra bourbon that they didn't plan on distributing, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. I think they were, you know, trying to be the culprits. They were, you know, had some legitimate reasons. You know, these people, some of them, you know, worked in the distilling industry, and they would tell, you know, their potential clients, hey, you know, this is mislabeled product that they can't resell, or like you said, just didn't make the cut, or, you know, et cetera there. So, but, you know, again, they little time caught up with them, and, you know, hopefully it won't be something that happens again, like, especially with the Van Winkles. It's hard enough to get anyway. Definitely don't need huge allotments of it disappearing.
Yeah, no. So I see, speaking of Van Winkle, I see also on GoBourbon.com right now a picture of a 20-year Pappy Van Winkle in a box of Do-Si-Dos Girl Scout cookies. So I know we're talking about at the Bourbon Classic, you know, high quality chefs and food pairings and bourbon and that kind of thing. That's not this, right?
Correct. maybe it will be in the future. I think, you know, the bourbon and Girl Scout pairing, Mark, has just really been, it was kind of our way of having fun, you know, just experimenting with, again, marrying bourbon is just a kind of a quirky food pairing, and that article is just, oh my goodness, it's been shared and went viral. I mean, it's an article that was several years old, but of course, where Girl Scout cookies are seasonal,
right?
I guess a feather in our cap. I haven't seen another media entity try to replicate that, and ours gets the huge lion's share of being, you know, being viral, being shared by across just a vast, you know, network of, you know, the social media ocean there. So,
well, you get good content, and then you get it up first, as you know, in search engine optimization world. Those are the two kind of things that create longevity or you know, in this case, that's why you're seeing it everywhere on social media pop up around Girl Scout cookie time. So kudos to you, my friend. That's been a good one. So,
yeah, thank you.
A couple more, and I'll get you out of here. I know you're busy. If you're starting in NKY right now, Northern Kentucky, obviously it's gotten on the bourbon trail with New Rift Distillering. So let's say you're up in Northern Kentucky and you want to take a route on the bourbon trail, starting up here. What do you suggest for somebody that's new to bourbon to kind of experience the bourbon trail in a day or so?
Yeah, you know, if you're in Northern Kentucky, you're in a good position there to be, I would say, within an hour, depending on what aspect, what part of the trail you want to conquer. You know, you're in a good position to be there within, again, you know, less than an hour proximity. You know, if you're in Northern Kentucky, if you want to, you know, proceed on, I guess it would be 75 south there.
Yeah.
But basically heading towards Lexington.
Yep.
You know, if you do that, you know, you can jump off there and be at Buffalo Trace from Cincinnati, I'm sure, just a little over an hour's time. And once you're at one of these major distilleries, you know, the beauty of that is, you know, there's anywhere from three to four of them within a 20-minute radius of that. So, you know, once you're at Buffalo Trace, you're 15 minutes from Wild Turkey, and from Wild Turkey, you're 5 minutes from Four Roses. And, you know, within that, you're within less than 20 minutes from Woodford Reserve. You know, obviously, you know, Lexington has their bourbon, Alltech bourbon facility here, Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale. you can check out. You know, or if you're in Cincinnati, you want to carve up what we call more of the Western Front, you just, you can pursue towards Louisville there, and then Jim Beam is right there, and once you're at Beam, you're, 15 minutes from Bardstown, which is where, you know, Heaven Hill and Barton's distillery Willet is, and then from there, you're, a half hour from Maker's Mark, so, again, if you're, depends on where you want to split off, what you're interested in, but, once you're at one distillery, you've got, a number of them right at your fingertips.
What's on your bucket list, your bourbon bucket list that you haven't gotten to do yet? What do you really want to do?
Another good question here, Mark, that I really haven't taken the time to foresee. I would like to get out a little more and explore some of the micro distilleries, a little closer here. Again, spend a little more time in New Riff there. Louisville's got, a number of micro distilleries popping up. There's a nice landscape emerging that, that I would like to kind of get, spend a little more time, figure out what they're up to, and, just kind of how that landscape is evolving.
That sounds like a nice business trip up to Northern Kentucky to New Riff and Boone County Distilling, and have a little tag-along team of Fort Thomas Matters with you.
I love it, brother. Well, I'll definitely hit you up. We can carve it up there if you want.
Let's book it. Seth Thompson, the publisher for Bourbon Review. You can find them at gobourbon.com, Facebook, I'm sure, Instagram, and all that kind of stuff as well. And then you can find those guys next weekend in Louisville at the Bourbon Classic. So, Seth, thanks so much for being on Fort Thomas Matters Radio.
Hey, Mark, thanks for having me. Look forward to being back there and, talking bourbon with you.
Thanks, Seth. Next on Fort Thomas Matters Radio, we're going to start to delve in a little bit more intricately to the Fort Thomas City Council races. There are 9 candidates for 6 spots. All 6 incumbents are seeking re-election. So we're going to do an individual one-on-one podcast with each one, kind of delve into the issues a little bit more so than we could with their introduction op-eds, which you can find those archived on the Election 2016 tab at the top of FortThomasMatters.com. And like I said, those will start in perpetuity next week. So again, for Seth Thompson, this is Mark Collier with Fort Thomas Matters Radio. Sponsor once again, Omega Processing Solutions, right here in Fort Thomas, Kentucky. Are you an independent business owner looking for a better way to process credit cards? You should probably call Omega Processing Solutions. They have a straightforward application and approval process. It makes it really simple. Even I can do it, and I do it. They have a 2-page application. They act upon it really quickly, usually within the same day. They don't outsource any critical functions, and that means that Omega Processing Solutions can get you from application to up and running in a very timely manner. To schedule an appointment with one of their professional account executives, call 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724, or shoot them an email, info@omegap.com. Again, for Omega Processing Solutions, this is Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio. You can always subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just hit subscribe. Please give us a rating, a high one if you would. And also, you can check out our archives at the podcast app at the top of FortThomasMatters.com or on FortThomasMatters.podbean.com.